Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DB Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DB Radio staff, nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
The following includes conversation relating to cryptocurrency. The information provided and discussed is strictly for educational and informational purposes only. Any use of any information is done so at your own risk. DV Radio LLC, as well as the hosts and guests of the show, take no responsibility if you wish to use any of the information in your daily life. Again, the topics discussed are strictly for informational and educational purposes only.
I am Chris, the CEO.
My name is Paul, I'm the COO.
I am Chris, aka Little Chris, the Chief Technical Officer.
My name is Zach, I'm the Chief Marketing Officer, better known as the WEN Marketing Officer, because it never gets done, right?
Of Finity Innovation LLC. Hour-long show, we will talk about Finity, crypto in general, DeFi, blockchain technology, and just talk about anything, whatever the hell we feel like talking about.
Get to know us at a little more personal level.
Babbling nonsense.
Love these guys.
Show me the money. Show me the money!
All right. Good morning, everybody. This is Affinity Protocol. You are listening to us, not live this time, but pre-recorded at WDVR, DVRadio.net. Like I mentioned, we are recorded this week because the entire crew is away doing some family stuff. So we want to make sure we got a show out to you. So here we are. I am Chris. We have with us the rest of the crew, Paul, Chris, and Zach. How are you guys doing today?
I'm doing great.
Awesome. Good, man. I hear that dog of yours in the background.
I know she is. She's messing with my stuff again. She heard me on the podcast. She said, oh, they're doing a podcast. I'm coming to mess with him.
I was going to say, I know that she heard you on there and she's coming down being like, yo, we about to go outside like right now, right?
Going outside. I want some treats.
All that fun stuff. But yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, those that don't know, it's my son's third birthday this weekend. And most of us on the team, we haven't really had another get together, a little bit of time off that we can just hang out and have some drinks and relax, that kind of stuff. So ends up being we're going pretty close to where Zach is. And Chris is going to take his family and stuff up. And unfortunately, little Chris, you got to work a little bit this weekend and whatnot, so you won't make it, but you know, it'll be a good time. So podcast brought to you by technology recorded.
Couldn't have better intro, boss, honestly. Yes, yeah, it's nice. I think the last time we all got together was in Cryptopia. So it'll be cool to go and have some family time as well and get to know each other a little bit more than just beyond work.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I gotta make sure I get this right. You want butt heavy and your girl wants White Claw.
Yeah. And like I told Chris today, I did get my haircut today for you guys.
Oh, no word. Yeah. I didn't even get my haircut this week, so I'm gonna be looking like a homeless dude.
Yeah, I'm in desperate need. But hey, it is what it is, man.
As long as you show up with the gold chains, everybody's happy.
Yep.
Right.
Hey, should I was thinking about getting a white Camry with the gold trim package.
Oh, man. If you don't show up with that, I'm going to be disappointed.
Oh, shit. So what's up, little Chris?
Nothing much. Just working in the background as usual.
Yeah. Working on.
You got to take a vacation at some point, too, man.
Man. I take vacations like once a year now.
Once a year? I haven't had a vacation in multiple years. I mean, I think, old man, we were talking with you about that not even, you know, 2 weeks ago or something. And your wife finally caved and had a moment of weakness with the kids and said, book the damn vacation.
Yep. And I'm excited for those who don't know, which is pretty much everybody. I am going to Vegas. The wife and I are going to spend 5 days there. She's never been. I've been there 3 times with the military. So finally going out there. And this will be the first ever vacation with just my wife and I in 23 years. So pretty excited about it. Pretty excited.
Yeah, see, I had a conversation with my wife about that too when I was joking around about you going to Vegas. Because if you remember me telling you, the father-in-law talked to us and was like, hey, you know, I want to take the kid for like a week, 10 days, something like that in the middle of summer. Cause he just retired.
Yep.
So he's got all sorts of time. So he's like, you know, that way you guys can have a little week and go on a vacation yourself. And he was talking about doing it in the summer. And I was joking around with my wife and I was like, yo, we can meet Chris and his wife out in Vegas and do like a dual vacation here. And she just kind of gave me like the dagger stare. and I was like, You know, it is a joke, but like if there was even like a hint of hope, you know, I'd be joking around and just seeing what flight you were on in advance and then just show up on the plane and something and be like, hey, what's up, man? But I don't know what we're going to do either. It hasn't been as long as you and your wife, but
I know. Yeah. And I want to be clear about that, too, because, you know, I don't want to give people the wrong impression. That is not because I mean, I know I'm cheap, but, you know, it's not like I'm neglecting my wife here. All right. We started having kids really, really young at like 20. So, you know, you get into that cycle and then my wife didn't want to leave the kids. You know, we felt, you know, I don't know. You know, when you have kids, you kind of get it that you feel like you don't want to leave them behind or whatever. So that kind of just went on and on for the majority of our adult lives. So
nah, man, fuck them kids.
Right. So this was not something like don't look at it and go, hey, Chris, that Chris is an asshole. He don't treat his wife good. Nope. I've tried for many years. I tried to get her to go on vacation. Yeah.
She's been the primary one that like when you're like, yo, let's go on a vacation. Her first response is like, oh, where are we taking the kids? And exactly. You're like, no.
Yeah. Exactly. So
we're taking them to the babysitter before we get to the airport.
We're taking them to your parents and then we're going to the airport. Get that.
Yeah, so where do you want to go on vacation? Well, I was thinking about going here. Let's go to Disney again.
Oh, again. Like they know you by name down there, don't they? And it's not just because you pay for stuff. They're like, oh, he's back.
Seriously, man.
So, all right. So, okay. So you guys are going to Vegas and it was a little like, you know, short term, you know, whatever. What is your like absolute like dream vacation spot? Like if there's one place in the entire world where it was like, you know, no expenses, get on a plane. You still sit in coach because you are cheap, but you know, you get on a plane if it requires a plane even, but where are you going?
So it would require a plane and I don't know if it's necessarily an exact location, but I'm thinking somewhere either like in either Ireland or Denmark or something out in the middle of nowhere. I want to be like out in the hills or the mountains. Preferably when it's not in the dead of winter, because I know both of those places get really cold. So in the summertime, you know, that's why I enjoyed Iceland a lot. Iceland's a really cool place. I like being secluded. I'm not really a beach person. I'm not really into all that, going to, you know, the islands and resorts. I want to be out in the middle of the woods, hills, or mountains.
Yeah, I like that. And I can agree with you on that because I'm not a beach person either. My wife is. She's always like, oh, beach this, beach that. And I'm like, nah, all that translates to me is that I'm cleaning up like a lot of sand. There's sand in the bag, sand in the car, sand at the house, you know, sand all the way down my son's ear. Like I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. Like it's not fun to me. And even when we went on our honeymoon, we went to an all-inclusive resort in St. Lucia. And like, don't get me wrong, I had a lot of fun, but there were days where she's like, oh, let's just go sit out by the pool. And I was always like, yeah, and do what?
Yeah.
and like, thank God they had a pool swim up bar because that's where my ass was planted basically the entire day. While she like took like three naps in one day in the sun. And I like, I couldn't do it. I was like, well, I'm gonna go find this billiards room and teach myself how to play snooker. And you do you. Zach, what about you? Dream vacation. Anywhere in the world. Bring whoever you want. We'll bump you up. You can fly first class, so it can be a long flight.
So personally, it's not that I don't like flights. I just have really bad restless leg syndrome and a bad back, and that's why I always say I'm going 24 on 40. So flights are not the best to me, so I definitely can't go that far. But I would love to see Hawaii just for the sake of it, just to say I really went. I'm not a big beach person either. Like, I will sit on the grass while everybody else goes plays in the sand because I ain't about it. Like, same thing. Literally, I hate it. My kid comes back covered in it, and I regret it. I'm like, great, I'm going to deal with this shit for weeks. I'm going to be cleaning sand out of my clothes. Not trying to do
that. And you give him a bath, and you're like washing hair, and you're like, wait, how? Like a month later, how is there still sand up here? Yeah, like
exactly.
There's no, like there's no way.
Whole place smells like banana boat for a month, right?
Well, and that's the thing too, though, is like if you think about it. You know, like there's a few places, and I guess you could argue that every beach is unique, but there's like a few beaches, at least in the US, that are extremely unique, right? Like you have the Gulf Coast, in Florida that they call the Emerald Coast, where the color of the water with the very, very white sand and stuff like that is really, really unique. And then, you know, you also do have, I'm sure there's others, so people are going to crucify me later in comments saying that I missed a particular one. But anyways, but you know, you have Hawaii where you have a lot of like that volcanic sand and stuff like that. So even if you're not going to the beach to be like, yay, beach day, which is what so far the three of us are not all about, at least you get to go see like some of that volcanic sand, and it's more of like an actual tourist attraction as opposed to, hey, we're just going to go to the beach and get covered in sand for no goddamn reason type thing.
Yeah, well, you know, this is where it's going to get messed up, because you know Chris is a beach person. He don't spend all that damn time in the gym for nothing.
That's why I saved him for last, because I'm waiting to be like, all right, young man, where's your ideal vacation? He's going to be like, the beach.
So actually
the gym.
No. It would be a one-way flight to Okinawa, Japan.
How did I know you were going to Japan? Should have known
that. Well, it's still an island, so
they got beaches.
They're beautiful, but I'd rather be just walking around the city.
Exploring. Okay, yeah. I like exploring. I know lots of conversations we used to have when we were at the same job was about you being in Japan and stuff like that. I know you like it. What's that drink that you had that you said creeps up on you when you have it?
Well, which one? Habusake?
I don't remember
or which one. Because both of them sneak up on you.
Not that second one. I don't remember us talking about that one. But the first one, I think it was.
You're talking about Amori.
Oh, yeah, that.
Wine rice.
Yeah.
Rice wine. Yeah, that sneaks up on you.
Yeah, you talked about that.
Did somebody say wine?
You know, it's funny, it's not Japan, but I do have a bottle of soju, which is from Korea, for the people who don't know, right next to my desk.
Oh, that's because you're a smart man.
Yeah.
I had some Korean for dinner tonight.
Oh.
Oh, word?
Beef bulgogi, man.
The old man would love living in Okinawa, because you know why? Flights are cheap.
Oh, I like that.
To travel Asia. Yeah, I used to go to Thailand for like 150 round trip.
Damn.
Yeah.
You didn't have to say flights, just say cheap, and he's fucking there.
Right? You don't even have to, like, I mean, and I'm not saying it is boring, but you could be like, yo, this is going to be the most boring time of your life, but it's going to be mad cheap. And he'll be like, yo, I'm thinking about this.
I'm down.
Yeah, man. He's going to whip out the khakis with the polo shirt.
That's literally all he has in his closet.
That's what I'm wearing right now, man.
what was that? It was either one of the times we were golfing or, man, what the hell was it? When I was joking around and like we hadn't even gotten out the car yet or something, and we had the windows rolled down, and I was like, man, you're just gonna get out that car wearing nothing but khakis and a polo, and then you got out, and of course that's what you were wearing.
I'm like a damn cartoon character, man. Every time you see me, it's like the same. It's like a uniform at this point.
Yeah, it's not a lie. It just depends on when's the last time you wore that nice like pastel purple polo.
I spent a bit. I got a lot more button downs for my new job, but I am wearing my yellow one right now, which I do like.
Oh, that yellow one is assaulting on the eyes. I don't like that one.
Oh shit!
I don't like that one at all.
Well, damn.
Well, hey, but in any case, do you want to go do a Scandinavian trip with me? Because that's one of my my dream vacation is to go up and see the Northern Lights and kind of be out in a cabin in the middle of nowhere somewhere in Scandinavia. So, you know, if your wife doesn't want to leave the kids again, and I know that my wife don't want to go there because there's not a beach, we can go out and we can find some golf courses and stuff, you know?
Hell yeah. Those places are usually full of golf courses, especially up in the Arctic Circle. If you catch it during the summer where it's like 23 hours of sunlight,
Exactly. You go get your 8 o'clock tea time, play 18, you know, do your drinking, go back, take a nap, head out there 8 o'clock at night, get another tea time.
Hell yeah.
Chris, you can't be tired. What's that?
I said, Chris, you can't come.
Oh, damn.
I didn't want to come.
See? He didn't even want to go. All right, so BS out the way. So one thing that we know that we've been discussing this one for weeks, and you know, Zach, we've talked to you about it too, because there are differences in marketing and sales and stuff like that as well. So we got a lot to talk about with this one. This is, and I'm not trying to sound like I'm trying to cater it to us. I'm just catering it to what I specifically know. So, you know, old man with your background in selling cars and being a little bit in sales, and Zach with you doing marketing and sales and stuff like that. I know that you guys can elaborate on some other tools of the trade or some other career fields, but it, at least for me, going through the IT realm, you kind of look and you see what jobs are available that may not necessarily 100% match your background, but because it's in the overarching career field, you go that route. And what you see a lot of people end up doing is they pigeonhole themselves, whether it's by purposefully designing it for themselves so that they have job security, or just because it's a good enough paying job and they're good enough at it that they stagnate and that's where they stay. But you look at specific niches within a career field or like a very specific job, very specific role. Is that a career death sentence? So that's kind of the main question and topic that we're going to be talking about, and we'll try to look at it from a few different aspects, because, you know, especially with the project and stuff like that, we talk about diversity. We talk about, you know, reaching out and getting into a lot of different things, a lot of different projects, you know, even just looking at a lot of different blockchains or networks and crypto and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm sure that we can, out of every dozen people that are in crypto, we can find someone who is, you know, hey, I'm going to be on Ethereum, and I'm only going to be on Ethereum for the rest of my entire life. Like, screw every other blockchain. I don't care about them. Screw Bitcoin, screw BSC. And I'm sure there's plenty of those people for each of those different networks that have chosen that path by design, or have chosen that path and just stayed there, almost like getting into a very specific role in a career. So kind of just an open-ended question. Is doing something like that a career killer?
I say yes, because let's talk about this in the realm of development / IT. What I've noticed is that, let's say from the backend developers, they don't have that aspect of creating a user-friendly interface while a designer would. Most developers, backend developers, so to speak, will not step foot into design or front-end work, which is really user interface. What you'll see is these developers create some complex applications, which would leave the user like, what the hell's going on? How can I use this?
That's just a huge difference in mentality, because you have someone that's going to, you know, kind of very strictly follow specifically programming logic, while you look at something that is, you know, can be considered an art or a science, where you look at, you know, studying sociology or psychology, where it's a different logic set. And even getting into design and sales and marketing and, you know, even looking at like the specifics of how some stores and gas stations model the what's on the shelf and where it's placed in the store is a very exact science that, you know, when you think about it, like from a little bit of a logical perspective, like you're like, hey, you know what, this makes sense. Put the drinks right next to the counter. That way, when you're on a hot day, if you go to check out and you see that cooler right there, like, damn, that Mountain Dew looks good as hell. I'm gonna buy that. And it's a good logic, but that, you know, coming from a software perspective, you don't think like that. You think strict, like very, very, very strict functionality, not what's going to play to the psychology of a person and a user. So I wholeheartedly agree, because both me and you specifically have worked with a lot of backend developers that, you know, they come out and they see the UI that was matched up to what they did under the hood, and they can't even use the application that they made because it doesn't make sense to them for how they architecturally built it in their head and in the code versus how it's presented to the user.
Well, the other thing to this question too, though, is it's very open-ended, because you're talking about an extreme situation. You're talking about somebody that is so focused and so, you know, with the blinders on, pigeonholed into one aspect that they're just not seeing beyond that. I don't necessarily disagree, but I would say to a point, you got to stay focused on, and maybe even more to just a point, like to be really successful in something, you have to stay focused and you have to stay in your lane in order to become a quote unquote subject matter expert or to be somebody that is, you know, highly sought after to make yourself marketable. If you're too much of a jack of all trades, you really get put in a position where you're going to be more of a helper or somebody that's working alongside that subject matter expert that maybe can bridge the gaps between other branches or other departments, but you're really not the person that's going to be doing that. So there is a give and take with it, but I think that's really, you never want to go too deep into anything, but you really, if you really want to succeed in a specific thing, diversifying, especially career-wise, could be bad.
Yeah, and I can agree with that. But at the same time, let's look at this from a business point of view. Let's say, as somebody who's ran multiple businesses, let's say you step into, healthcare business that you know nothing about. Are you going to try to run that business with no knowledge of healthcare, or are you at least going to learn the foundations to run that business successfully?
Well, of course, but again, that's goes back to what I was saying. At that point, you're a manager, therefore you're there to support the people that are doing the actual job, right? I'm not a doctor, I'm not a nurse, right? Like I wouldn't want my doctor also being the one that's doing the x-rays and doing the blood work and all that stuff. That's not really their job. You know, their job is to, you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. But the thing about it, there's a lot of people that won't even learn the field that they're managing.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely true.
That's the entire military.
Yeah.
Oh, well, but that's a good point, too, because that makes you think of that fun F word, a.k.a. fundamentals. Right. Because you can have the fundamentals like Chris, old man, what you were saying, and get into somewhat of a niche and become that subject matter expert. And you have the fundamentals to look elsewhere where you can also, you know, do some form of integration. But I feel like that's where, like, at least from my perspective, we're focused a little too much on IT. So, and I know we brought this up when we were figuring out what we were going to bring up for the podcast this week. But so let's look at the sales aspect, because, you know, Chris, you were doing car sales way back in the day. Now, yep. Are the question there is, are the fundamentals of sales in general good enough that you can take all of your experience in that niche area of sales, doing car sales, and be a successful salesman elsewhere? And I know before you get started that you're going to talk about how salesmen are a different breed of people and you just like doing it and whatever. But I would find it personally, just, you know, looking out from the looking in from the outside, it'd be difficult for me to say, well, hey, this guy that is a great car salesman is going to be a great, you know, from way back in the day, because you're old, a great door-to-door vacuum salesperson, right? I'm the guy going door-to-door, knocking and advertising a Hoover here.
I'm gonna let Zach carry this more than me, because he has a lot more experience in sales. I did it for about a year and a half in two different situations, but very quickly before he gets going, the short answer for me would be yes. But go ahead, Zach.
No, so literally my answer is going to be it can't be any shorter than that, but it was going to be short and I was going to cut you off. I'm going to let you finish, but this is just like the fundamental that I've carried myself as a salesman who's done car sales, cellular sales, door-to-door sales, customer service sales, like anything in sales, I have done it to some degree. I mean, most of my career is in cellular sales, working up to a general manager. But that aside, I have had a foot in the other realms, and I was successful in those other realms strictly because I have one motto that you guys have heard me say before. It's not about the product. It's about who's selling it. Anybody will buy something off of you if they trust the person who's selling it. Doesn't matter if it's a vacuum or if it's a 2008 Audi. If they like you, they will buy it. So when it comes to real world application, that's what I've carried from this into crypto, right? And again, not trying to sell anybody anymore. You know, I'm actually talking about something that I love, so I don't really like to call it selling. But that mentality of preaching and getting knowledge across to people about a product that you enjoy, that doesn't change.
Yeah, okay, sorry, go ahead, Chris.
No, it's just that, and I know where he's coming with that from, you know, obviously bleeding over into crypto, where we're not trying to sell anybody on anything, but at the same time, when you go through, because I have actually been through like sales training classes, you know, they, when you apply to certain dealerships, they make you go through these classes. One of the things they always tell you is to sell yourself, right? But that rings true even when you're doing the right thing. Like that was why car sales for me, even though I was pretty successful at it, I had to end it because I was too honest, right? If people didn't want to buy something or what, I would just tell them, hey, that's cool, go look elsewhere. You know, I'm not going to tell you have to stay. They don't want to hear that. But it is about you. You're selling yourself. And a lot of those people would come back because they would appreciate that. They would appreciate the fact that I was honest with them and wasn't trying to just lock them in right there. I was going to, hey, just like anybody else, I'm going to buy something. I want to shop around. I can understand that. Go shop around. If you like what I showed you, you like me, you'll come back. Same thing with what we're talking about, how this bleeds into like crypto, right? We're creating a company. We have a token. We have products. With the way this industry is, you really have to let people know who you are and show them who you are through, you know, like we always talk about being transparent, being who you are, you know, being honest. And what ends up happening is it opens the doors for people to say, well, I want to hear more, because it's not some chucklehead behind the microphone or behind the camera that thinks they're better than me. It's somebody that's personable, that wants to talk to me and wants to listen. So that's really where that sort of bleeds over, where it's not, you know, I just don't want to muddy the waters with, you know, the sales versus just, you know, selling yourself to open doors for that conversation.
I'm going to be honest with you. All I heard from that is that you're selling yourself, and I'm trying to get a piece of that action, you know?
Oh, you name it, man. You got your price.
Well, so I hear all of this stuff, like, and I'm not saying I don't agree with it. I totally do agree with it. But I guess the next question with that is going to be, okay, fundamentals are important. Fundamentals can take you really far, and they can help, you know, transfer abilities and knowledge to be able to get a job done elsewhere. But would you think that that's provided that the overarching fundamentals are similar? And the reason I ask that is, you know, to kind of to come back towards IT, I think that back in the day, saying that you were a computer science major or something like that, and back in the day for technology, nowadays is, you know, only 10, 15 years or so. But, you know, saying, hey, I have a computer science degree 10, 15 years ago kind of means that you're almost like a jack of all trades. And then it really depends on what job you're going into after that, where you really developed a niche, because it wasn't as big previously. But now you look at how it's expanded, almost like, you know, you see how the medical field expands. You can have a general practitioner doctor, but that general practitioner doctor might not know, you know, a whole lot about oncology and you know, cancerous cells and stuff like that. They might just know, hey, I need to refer you there. Same thing with, like, if you look at some of the certifications and stuff you can get in IT, is, you know, there are classes specifically for network fundamentals. You know, does that network fundamental mean that, you know, those networking fundamentals you have are good for integration if you're looking at software, but that, you know, you're not necessarily that software expert and you're more in a networking niche.
Yeah.
So does a networking fundamental make you a general IT specialist, or does it make you a networking specialist, I guess?
No, I think by having any of those fundamentals, all it does is give you the tools to know who or where to get the next piece of information from. Sort of like being a mechanic. If you're a general mechanic, right, you're probably going to be pretty good at your trade overall, fixing a car or truck, boat, whatever it may be you're a mechanic on. But then when it comes down to doing transmission work or engine work, you typically have somebody that's their focus, that's their job. That doesn't mean the person working on the engine or the transmission doesn't know some things about fixing other stuff, but they're focused on being an engine mechanic or a transmission mechanic. It's always good to have a broader knowledge as to the whole scope of what you're working on. Like you made that reference with doctors, right? If you're a doctor, you want to know what like all these other doctors do, but that doesn't mean that you are comfortable doing it or that you should be doing that. If you want to be good at your field, it depends. If you're that type of person that wants to stay in that field and be good at that one thing, or if you're comfortable being a jack of all trades, typically jack of all trades get paid less. So,
So I'm with that. So, here's the last thought before we introduce our guest host, because I'd like to get his thoughts on it as well. So then I guess the last thought for that initial question of is staying in a niche for a career, a death sentence. So would we prefer to revise that question to say is voluntarily staying in a niche for a career field potentially a death sentence because you stagnate and you get complacent on some of your fundamentals in the overarching career field because you have not necessarily made yourself a subject matter expert in one area, but you have only stagnated in one area? Does that potentially hurt your career? So would revising it to say that you're voluntarily doing that be a better statement or a better question?
All right. Well, the last thing I want to say on that is you can't really answer that, right? Because it's too broad of a, if it's a career field that's kind of dying, or if it's, something where it's not evolving and you can't evolve with it, then yes. But things, jobs that like are recession proof and, just like, again, I'll go back to the doctor thing, right? We're always going to need doctors. But with technology, there's certain fields in technology that evolve or drop off, or, certain factory jobs or whatever that get replaced by robots. Like those are the kind of jobs. Yes. If you put yourself in that situation, it could be a quote unquote death sentence. But there's others out there that I don't believe so. But before anybody else goes on this, I do want to introduce our guests tonight. We do have Jeff with us from Shilex. So Jeff, thank you for joining us. If you didn't catch it, we're talking about pigeonholing yourself and what that could mean in careers and jobs.
My name is Jeff.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting conversation.
Yeah, so...
I was just going to say, how are you, Jeff?
Busy, but doing really well and enjoying the ride.
Dude, that's awesome. We've heard nothing but good stuff coming from you guys' end, and I have absolutely no doubt that you are keeping yourself very busy.
Yeah, we've probably bitten off more than we can chew, but just taking it a day at a time and trying to crank out as much value to the space as we possibly can, and really just try to do things a little bit differently.
Yeah, I mean, you got a good team with you as well. So biting off more you can chew just means that you got to let it marinate a little bit so it can get easier to chew. And then you take that bite down, you'd be all right.
Exactly.
Yeah. So if we could take a minute away from the actual solid discussion we're having here, those people that are listening now, hopefully if you're tuning in, that you're listening to the crew from Affinity. This is Affinity Protocol. If this isn't what you're intended to listen to, you might want to go tune it to another station now. But we do have Jeff. He's with Shilex. Now, could you give us a brief overview of who you are and what Shilex is about? So anybody that's tuning in that might not have heard of you has an idea of what Shilex is.
Yeah, absolutely. So right now we're known as the DeFi affiliate platform. We basically have set up relationships with about 25 projects. We have about 12 of them live on our site right now. Our affiliate platform essentially rewards community members and influencers for promoting or evangelizing the projects that they love. And right now it's really focused on tokens with a tax mechanism because that's the lowest barrier to entry. We just launched on the first in our public beta. So we're kind of controlling our growth to some capacity at this point. But ultimately we're going to be across all of the major chains and really excited about what we're building on that front.
That's awesome, man. And what is your website so people can go visit it and check it out?
Yeah. So right now our website is chillx.com. I say right now because for our affiliate portion that will likely be changing to a new URL soon. But chillx.com will kind of encapsulate all of our different products. So what we're actually doing at a high level is we're building a, everybody uses the term ecosystem, but I guess we really are. We're building like a series of platforms that are going to that are all designed to be free or near free for projects to use with the understanding that they would have affiliate programs as part of every single one of those. And we're trying to build the largest affiliate network in DeFi. That's our ultimate goal. And so we've got about 5 utilities in the works. We've got one launched already. We've got another one launching on the 1st of next month, the one launching on the 15th of next month, and one launching on the 1st of the following month. So we're going to be putting out a lot of utility very quickly.
Well, busy is an absolute understatement.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time to join us.
Anything for Affinity. I love you guys.
We love you too, man. We got a lot of love on this podcast. I know some of your background, Jeff, and I know you've been in business a long time. You've been doing a lot of different things in your life. I want to hear some of your take on this conversation. So, Paul, if you could please repeat what we're talking about here to Jeff so he can weigh in on it.
Absolutely. So we're looking at different perspectives. The original question is staying in a niche inside of a career field, potentially a job death sentence? And after some discussion, we kind of determined that, you know, provided you have the correct fundamentals for the overarching career field, you know, you can be successful, but realistically, it's going to come up to the individual, because if the individual voluntarily goes down a path that has, you know, a high, even a medium probability of becoming obsolete without kind of branching out and have let themselves stagnate and get complacent on the rest of that career field, you know, they face, you know, a harsh reality of, are they going to be able to get another job in that career field? And I like that, Chris, you brought up, you know, like manufacturing line work that's getting replaced by robots, because that not only eliminates a specific career field, but it really transforms the career field of what's replacing it, because now you have to look at being an operator of some of these machines where you might have been mechanically inclined before, if you were the guy putting the nut on the bolt and tightening, so to speak, to now your entire career field has disappeared and it is replaced by people who are going to be managing, you know, almost IT software and IT related products that are going to, you know, have these robots build it and stuff like that. So, Jeff, that's any point or any light that you can bring into that discussion, because, you know, a lot of us having an IT background and Zach having an extensive sales background, we have a couple of different perspectives, but I'd love to get your thoughts because I'm sure you're going to bring up something that we hadn't even thought of.
Yeah. So I guess the first thing that comes to mind is that, you know, at the end of the day, it's really about how easily you can be replaced, right? In any job. And, you know, and that doesn't necessarily mean, like, I don't really care if the fundamental belief is that, you know, that skill set is no longer going to be mainstream. But like, all of a sudden, like, if you are truly have honed your craft at something that is difficult, it doesn't matter. Like, look at, like, somebody at some point probably said, like, hey, like, we're not going to need blacksmiths anymore because we're going to be able to automate everything. And yet there are tons of people that are still blacksmiths today that are going back and doing it the old ways, and they honed a craft and they sell it for a premium, right? And so that's because it's a hard to develop skill, and people are willing to, you know, people are willing to pay for things that are hard to, like things that are hard to learn. So I have a friend who's 70 years old and he's in IT as well. And he was on a suite of products called I don't even remember, but his his job basically went away. Like, he didn't have work for several years, and everybody went and learned new programming languages, and he was like, well, what am I going to do for my career? And all of a sudden there's a shortage of people that know how to work on microsystems or whatever the platform that he knows. And the next thing you know, he has more work than he knows what to do with. Right. And so I find it interesting that things can go full circle like that. But it's because he's very good at his, you know, his craft. And there was people that still needed him. On the other side of things though, like, if you're not willing to adapt with the times, like you said, learn to operate the machines or equipment, or just upskill yourself consistently. So in programming, it's like, don't get stuck on one programming language, right? Like, you need to be learning the new ones that are coming out, or at least getting familiar with them, so that, like, if all of a sudden the demand for your specific programming language is no longer the hot thing, making sure that you can pivot into it. And I'll use myself as an example. So, you know, I my entire career have constantly been making pivots. I started out in sales. I sold a business, and then I went and started out in sales. And then from sales, I went into marketing, and from marketing, I went into operations. And then from operations, I went into, you know, business operations, then M&A work, and then FP&A work, and then, venture capital. Right. And it's like that arc really has to do with, like, my never wanting to settle and constantly wanting to learn. And DeFi was something that I knew nothing about a year ago. And now, you know, I just look at this as a huge opportunity. And so instead of being complacent, I was like, I'm going to learn everything I possibly can about the space, create a voice in the space, build something in the space, whether or not it makes me any money long-term or not. Like, for me, I will have learned a very interesting skill set in a new industry that's going to set me up really well. And something that, you know, anybody can learn, but I take it to another level. I make sure I can get in and master something. And that's what people need to do to, you know, succeed.
So, see, all I'm hearing now is that it's just a crapshoot. You could get lucky. It could work out for you, or it could just be a dead end.
That's what life is, man.
Man, I don't like that, man. I'm a very calculated person. I need analytical facts to make decisions.
I mean, I'm the type of person, like, when I have a job, I don't care how much I love it. Every time somebody gives me an opportunity to interview, I interview, and I go research the company, and I look up what they do, and I look up their competitors, and I prepare for the interview. And I have no interest in taking the job. I like learning about new businesses. I like having the conversations. I like to, like, find out a little bit of information about how they're doing. And, like, though, like, always having a curiosity to figure out new things to do and new things to learn is, like, how you'll make sure you don't get stuck. You can do absolutely anything you put your mind to. Like in the last 2 weeks, I learned Tailwind CSS. I knew some basic CSS before that. I learned Tailwind. The team needed me to do a little bit of JavaScript work, so I learned React, and I had read a couple books on it before. So it was like, it's not like I went into it completely cold. You know, did a little bit of programming. Then I wanted to go and make something like a little mock-up for an NFT, and so I went and learned Blender, and I made a 3D mock-up of this cool thing. You know, in 8 hours. I probably never will use Blender again in my life. I'll probably never write a software myself. I'll probably never, need to do some more CSS. But, you know, as a CEO of a small startup, like, I'm rolling up my sleeves and gonna do absolutely everything I can to succeed. And it's like, for me, it's like that curiosity is gonna ensure that I'm learning enough and to be able to have enough conversations that no matter what the market does or what my role or like may or may not look like in the future, that, like, I can find something.
So, okay. So, and that's a very interesting concept, mainly because it, I don't want to say it contradicts the original question, but it basically brings up the point to potentially have a third revision to the question. So original question is, does going into a niche, is that a career killer? Second question would be, is voluntarily staying in the niche?
You can't keep revising the question.
Well, no, but it's you want to find the right question to ask. So then, would you say that it would be a better assumption or better statement to basically say that it is not a niche in a career field that makes a person stagnate or makes a person complacent, but it is the person's work ethic that is going to basically end up being the career killer versus the actual job itself? No matter how dead end the job may become, it's all going to come down to that individual deciding that they are basically refusing to do anything other than what they're supposed to do to show up A to Z, do the bare minimum to get the job done and go home and have a good time.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I think it's preparing yourself for opportunity, right? It's that like preparation meets opportunity, like scenario. Like I have a friend who he runs a very successful business. It's not a sexy business. It's like they do roll off containers like for construction sites for dumping waste. And he took that business from like $1 million a year up to $12 million a year. And you would think that like he would just be as happy as can be. And he probably is, but he's not a complacent person. He's always curious. And he decided to buy a plot of land for his family recently and went out to start clearing it. And so he looked at the rental costs for clearing stuff and decided he would just buy it and use the equipment and then just sell it because the secondary market looked really good. And so he sets this stuff up and he hires a guy for like, you know, $18 an hour or whatever to come run his equipment. And three people stopped by and asked for this guy's card while he was clearing this guy's land. So he brings it up to my friend. He's like, oh, like people were asking about like your equipment and stuff like that. And so instead of just being like, you know, whatever, he actually ended up hiring this guy, doubled his salary, got him up for $36 an hour. And he basically brought him in to help him to build this business. And he bought all the equipment. And now he's booked out for 18 months to do land clearing all over North Carolina. That business is going to do $3 million this year. And he started it 6 months ago.
That's just having the right attitude right there.
Right.
Yeah. So, awesome. I mean, part of it's also like, you know, he's got the means to be able to capitalize on something like that. But a lot of people have means. He's just willing to put in the work to actually get it done and hire the people and make the tough decisions and buy the equipment to make the investments. But it's, you know, curiosity.
Yeah, one thing we forgot to mention to you before you come on here that this is kind of like a congressional trial with all the question swapping from Paul.
So. I welcome it.
That's how I roll. You know that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So I got a question for you, Jeff. This is way, way off topic. So last time we seen you was at Cryptopia, and it was literally the after party, what would they call it? The Meta Masquerade or whatever it was.
Yep.
So you were on your way out because you were driving from there straight up to Seattle. Obviously, you got up there. You were doing work-related stuff. Did you end up getting out in town, going to see any sites? Is Seattle still a shithole after the whole Chaz or Chad zone or whatever it was? Like, how did the rest of that trip go for you?
So this is a Republican podcast now.
Oh, come on. If there is anyone that is looking from the outside in, at least with what was being put out in the mainstream media, that place was looking like a shithole.
Yeah, politics aside,
it was looking like a shithole.
I'll say this. We went to, I have my favorite coffee shops in Seattle. It's called Storyville. It's actually like, well, they probably wouldn't even want me to say anything about it like that. But we actually went there. We waited in line. We go all the way in to get there. I was vaccinated for my work. My wife's with me. My daughter's with me. And she didn't have a vaccine card with her. And so they kicked her out. And so like we ended up having to like text a friend to send us one because we didn't have one for her. And so it was like, couldn't even go into a restaurant. Couldn't even go into a restaurant to get a cup of coffee with our 3-year-old after waiting in line for 30 minutes to even get in. So, yeah, saying it's a shithole is like an understatement. It's totally it's totally garbage. But I did go see some family up north, up in Anacortes, Washington, and did get some camping in as well. I made that trip across the country in my Land Cruiser that's set up for overlanding. It was snowing. And I still went and camped and did the whole thing and made a road trip out of it just so I can say I did it. But I don't know if you heard, though, I actually on my birthday, I was rushing home to go to a cabin in the woods with some friends back in Western North Carolina. So I stopped for a couple hours of sleep at a rest stop, and somebody tried to break into my car while I was sleeping.
I did see that. Kidding. You posted that on Twitter, did you not?
Yeah. It was crazy. And so, like, I carry a pistol, and I got my concealed carry permit and everything, and my car's all tinted, and I put my gun on my dash, and interestingly enough, before I left, my grandpa's girlfriend was like, "Hey, don't you worry about, like, you're going to stop at a rest stop, that somebody going to try to break in your car." I was like, "Nobody's going to break into the car."
Oh, man.
50-pound guy in a lifted truck with a Blue Lives Matter sticker on the back windshield. Like, I was like,
hey, you messed up by just saying that, because as soon as you said it, you sealed your fate.
Yep.
And so, of course, they come and they try to break into my car, and I set my gun on my dash, and ended up the person had a mental health issue, and I never drew my gun on them or anything like that. And it was just an unfortunate, situation for him, and it was unfortunate for me.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Damn. Well, at least everybody's safe.
Escalate.
Yeah. Damn, it's crazy. So I want to take, this is what I want to do for the last few minutes of our podcast here, to kind of bring this all around to what we're all kind of doing here in DeFi and on this podcast. And so we've talked a lot about being able to and be willing to pivot and diversify and everything you're doing with your career. And that does spill over into crypto and investments in general, whether it's through real estate, the equity markets, again, in crypto, anything like that. And everything that Jeff said, you can really tie that back. So when you're done listening here, go back, listen to what Jeff said again, and you can really tie that back into investments as well. Because when you stagnate and you're sitting in, whether it be one or two investments, even just investment styles, like I said, if you're 100% in real estate or you're 100% in equity, 100% in crypto, when things aren't looking so great, like right now in the crypto market and the equity markets, we're not doing so great, where the real estate market is booming. So you can take advantage of those things by doing your research, and really diversifying your portfolios into different avenues. Even when you drill it down into, like a specific stock, you wouldn't want to go 100% into one stock, for the same reasons, because you can hope it's going to perform, and it may long term, but there's other opportunities you could be taking advantage of at the same time. Also, the last thing I want to say on that is, when you talked about those gentlemen who thought that their craft was ending, but then they came back, years later or whatever, and then now all of a sudden they're a hot commodity. You also got to keep that in mind when you're looking at things. Don't give up. Don't give up on some investments. Some of them you have to give up on, but don't give up on things too quickly, because you just never know what's going to come next, right? We talk about different investment opportunities across whatever space, and people start feeling, a little down on it. They're giving up or whatever. You really never know what's going to happen down the road. So you got to trust your own gut. You got to trust your own intuition and your research, because that may be the thing that comes back, and now all of a sudden that investment's the hot commodity. Thoughts?
I agree with that.
Yeah. It's just like, I think you nailed it. I think that was absolutely spot on. And yeah, I mean, diversification in like everything you do, except for maybe your spouse, unless you're into that kind of thing. like probably key. It's really like, it's key to just like being well-rounded and being open-minded and trying new things and stepping out of your comfort zone. It's like, Like when I talk about like, and not financial advice, but like when I think about my own, like my own portfolio, it's like, I've got my high risk, my super high risk, like bets that I got in super early because I, you know, got word from a friend that it was going to be something cool. And I've got my more like, you know, like my somewhat less risky speculative, you know, investments in DeFi. And then I've got the ones where it's like, you know, things more like Affinity, where it's like, you know, a really strong, you know, really strong team, and it's a little bit less risky. But I mean, all of DeFi is risky from my perspective, right? Like, cause it's like, you know, but it's, you know, if you're going to make the investment, like make the investments in the ones that, if you're going to make bigger investments, like make the investments in the ones that, you know, where you can really, you know, you really believe in the team and you believe in the vision, you believe that they can actually deliver on it. And, you know, that, you know, the team is doxed and the team is solid. And, you know, that you can actually see a big market opportunity, right? Like, you know, one of the biggest issues in DeFi, in my opinion, is this fascination on market cap, right? And, you know, this idea that that there is this value out there that's like everybody's going to get super rich, but like that's just not the way liquidity pools work. And so, you know, it's instead of focusing so much on like near-term market cap, look at the total addressable market for the market that they're going after. And assuming that they can get 1% or 0.5% of that market, is that idea big enough to be able to ultimately do something meaningful? And that's the way that I'm looking at things. And so, like, you know, when I look at what you're doing with your peer-to-peer and with you know, with Adapt, and you know, and then also like looking at like other projects, like, you know, I have a relationship with a project that's in the gambling space, right? And it's like crypto gambling, and it's like, okay, well, crypto gambling, like the gambling industry is massive, like that I can see being very successful, right? Or I see projects that are in other, you know, other markets, again, you know, some of the PDE games, like the backing infrastructure stuff for PDE games, like, you know, again, like the gaming market is massive. And so I think that there's just a lot of different ways that you can evaluate some of these things and understand the risk levels differently than just, you know, some hyped market cap and having that being the definition of success. Because I can tell you, there's a correction happening. We're seeing it in the public markets today with these unicorns getting revalued. We're going to see the same thing happening with some of these altcoins that were the biggest, you know, getting reevaluated in terms of their valuation and, you know, what that means. So, you know, again, it always comes back to fundamentals. Is the business sound? Is the team sound? Is the market big enough? Can they actually do it? And if yes, like, I'm willing to gamble on them.
Yeah, yeah, 1,000% true. And it's all risk. You can be part of the team, you know, for example, like we've taken our own personal money and we're holders of Affinity ourselves. We run the team. We know nothing is going to happen as far as anything nefarious, but we don't control who's coming in and acquiring and selling. So even to us, you know, monetarily on a value basis, it's a risk. Right. It's not a risk to us, you know, in other ways, but we don't control the charts. We don't control who comes in and makes buys and who makes sales. We don't manipulate anything. So in that sense, it's still a risk even to us as the owners of the project. So it's all a risk. There's no way to avoid it.
Yeah, I know, reading between the lines, you're talking about that whale that dumped on you, like from what I've heard from like the murmurs in the shadows, like that guy was a pain in the ass from the beginning. So I remember having that conversation with your team about some of the difficulties with certain whales. And so when I heard that this person had dropped, I was like, oh, that must be that individual. So
yeah, and good riddance, man. He's somebody else's problem now. Yeah. So that's good stuff, man. Zach, you've been quiet over there, man. What you got going on?
Nothing, dude. I've been soaking it in, honestly. Oh, yeah. You know, Jeff just mesmerizes me. Everything he says just puts me in a trance. Shit, there's so much to speak about. You guys have been freaking going on for a while now. You know, honestly, it's just so much. But no, I appreciate the insight from both sides. This is a tricky space that we're in, and obviously we all want to navigate it in the best way.
Awesome. Chris, you got anything? Because we're getting real close to ending this thing. So I know you've been quiet over there as well. I want to give you an opportunity to chime in.
Nah, I got something good for the next show, though.
Oh, see, this guy's moved on to the next show already. We haven't even closed out this one.
Nah, because it's a long one. I think Zach would like this topic.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, that marketing is a holistic thing. It's not just on the job of the CMO to market the company.
Agreed.
I mean,
no, no. Don't tell him that. Because he's going to try to tell us to do stuff for marketing. Nah.
And then everybody listening here now is going to start sending all of us DMs when marketing. No, leave that on him.
Nah. We can dive in deep into that the next show.
I was about to start talking about it too, but I'll wait.
Oh, we'll leave. I agree. All right. Before we do end this, I want to give Jeff one more opportunity if he wants to drop his socials or anything regarding Shellex, or if you have any remarks that you want to make before we end this show. The floor is yours, Jeff.
Yeah, I mean, I don't come here just to plug my stuff, so I won't. I just wanted to say that, like, I love what you guys are doing. I love this team. I appreciate you guys having me on. And yeah, if you're not currently holding Affinity, like, I very strongly suggest, but not giving financial advice, that you do some research into the project and into the markets and do the things that I mentioned in terms of addressing the total market size and looking at the quality of what's already been delivered by this team. And I think you'll find yourself pleasantly surprised and more than likely wanting to buy the project. And if you do, that's your own decision, but know that I'm a fan.
We appreciate those words, Jeff. And just so you do know, we do have a long disclaimer that plays at the beginning of the show. So you're good. Yeah, absolutely.
He may not do it, but I'll humbly plug him in. So if you want to find Jeff and his wonderful, it's not as vibrant and as fun as it was, but his Twitter, you can find him at Capitalist DeFi on Twitter. And then his wonderful platform that he has, which we will be relaunching on. So you'll be able to, if you, as he's explained, if you like Affinity and you want to get other people on board, you can share your referral code and get a share of what you got that person on board for. So again, that's shillex.com. I will happily plug you in, Jeff. Not a problem.
Damn, you should plug me every time. That's better than anything I've ever done. If you can do that, like you guys should be a freaking massive, like 10 times. If you can deliver that kind of an elevator speech, that was way better than anything I've done. So thank you.
That's all right. We can clip this for you and get that, and you can play it.
Yeah, I'm just gonna play that. I'm just gonna play that every morning when I wake up.
We can charge you for that too, you know.
well worth it.
It's a 0.75% fee every single time.
That's awesome. Paul, do you have anything?
No, as soon as you cut the recording, I'll say something.
Hey, wait, what?
Trust me.
Okay. Sorry, everybody. You don't get to hear it. I do. I'll tell you later, though.
You ain't gonna want to hear it.
All right, Chris, we already talked to you. So, Chris, you don't have anything else, right? No? Good. All right. So we are going to end this show. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thank you again to Jeff for jumping on and getting into an awesome discussion with us, telling everybody about Shillex. Thanks for being part of the DeFi community, making things better for everybody. Thank you again to DV Radio and Bo for helping us out with this podcast, hosting it, doing all the editing. You're amazing. We love you. We appreciate it. Thank you to everybody out there listening. Those who've listened today for the first time, keep in mind, every other Sunday, we are here, usually live, right here on dvradio.net. For now, we are out.
Hit us up on Facebook and Twitter.
Radio.